Welcome to Japan Top 10. This is episode 408, Japan Top 10 Indie Artist Interview number 10 with Salvia De Avi and Melancholia. I'm your host, Edward.
And I'm Dean.
Let's get into it. Japan Top 10. Just a little note before we begin. This is our second last Listener Appreciation Month episode. Premium Platinum leveled episodes are for everyone this month, which means you don't have announcements, except for this one, and advertisements. It's all free and it's all here. All the songs that you could possibly want, all the talking you could possibly want from me and Dean.
And me.
If you've been enjoying all of the wonderful content you've been receiving this month, you should consider subscribing as a Patreon donor, just for a little of a dollar of a month.
That's right,
at least a little bit of a dollar, but anything you can give is great. And Japan Top 10 will be free for all listeners. Just you have to deal with some ads and some more announcements, but that's cool too, because you have to learn more about what we do here at Japan Top 10. So enjoy. If you have a song request for our Listener Appreciation Month, you can get it in at jtop10.jp. So Dean, you interviewed Salvia De Avi. Tell me a bit about them, and tell our listeners all about, well, give us a sneak preview of what we're going to expect in our interview.
Okay, well, Salvia De Avi is an independent artist who is based in Athens, Greece.
Come on, Athens.
So yeah, this is not only my first interview with someone in Greece, but it's my first interview for quite a while with someone in English.
Yeah, I was
past few have been in Japanese. So very interesting interview. She is a classically trained singer.
Yay, one of us.
Yeah, but she wasn't always a classically trained singer. She was going to tell you about that.
Cool.
Her music has quite a dark ethic, but I had a really nice time talking to her, and it was made even nicer because she's actually a fan of my music.
Really?
Actually, when we first started the interview, it was almost like she was interviewing me and telling me how wonderful my music was.
I love that, Dean.
Yeah, that's kind of cool.
Yeah, it's super cool. We have a superstar in our midst, ladies and gentlemen.
Next indie artist interview. You're going to be interviewing me.
It should be us, both of us.
Yeah.
That's great.
And then I can interview you.
Yeah. Well, I mean, technically, we kind of already do interview each other during these segments a little bit.
Well, we do.
But you know what? I would love to do an in-depth interview with you. It would be so much fun.
So, getting into a bit more detail, Salvia De Avi is an independent artist who writes, composes, performs, arranges, mixes, and produces her own songs. Never using automatic pitch correction, she delivers raw performances that aim to provoke an intense emotional response.
I like that. She's a lady on a mission.
That's great. She has been composing songs and writing lyrics since the age of 10. And at the age of 18, she abandoned her former belting technique. So she was a belter. Started taking classical vocal lessons and ended up developing affection for classical music and operatic arias.
So, listeners, Music Education Corner with Edward is back in session. Seems to be every episode that we do this. There's always something. So we got to educate the children. So,
yes.
The belting technique is something that you would normally hear from, if you're thinking about musical theater, it's what comes up a lot of the time. It's usually for like those big showy numbers that are like a show-stopping performance for a female vocal performer usually, although men can be belters too. And it's usually used to elicit like a big emotional response. And that's usually, it's like the crux or the pinnacle of the show. Modern pop belter, I guess Adele would be a very good example of that. She has a lot of belting in her songs, especially.
Yeah.
Easy on Me, which is the most recent single that was released, actually. I have a student of mine that's learning it. It's a lot of fun. It does have some elements of it, but a really good example of that one, actually, would be her song Hello. Because in the chorus, the hello from the other side, that business, that is like a very good example of a belt. Because there's a lot of support behind it. It comes from the gut. And it's really, really loud and powerful. And you can really feel and hear the emotion when she sings that. Even though she's just singing the word hello. I mean, I'm sure Adele could sing the phone book and it would be amazing. So there you go. That's what a belter is. And that's what a belter does. And it's interesting. And actually, going from belting into classical realm isn't that much of a stretch, actually.
Right.
It's a lot more about using your head voice and like really accessing the upper register if you're a soprano, or just accessing more color in your voice. Famously, actually, Barbara Streisand, a famous belter, she tried to do a classical album in, I want to say, the mid-70s, and it was a mixed reaction by people. I like it personally, but definitely it's not easy for people to transition over from belting into classical.
Yeah, the technique's very different, isn't it?
It is a very different technique. It seems like it might be very similar, but there's a lot more nuance in it. So kudos to our wonderful indie artist, Salvia Davi, for branching out and getting into that world. That's so impressive.
Yeah. And she's also, she's recorded a song in Japanese, which is why she's on this podcast. But yeah, she it's a very powerful song. You'll get to hear it later.
Great.
She translated it into Japanese herself. And if you understand Japanese, actually, the phrasing that she uses, the language that she uses, is also very powerful. Not the kind of language that you would usually hear a woman sing. So, yeah, it's very powerful in many ways, not just the vocal performance, but the lyrics as well, lyrically.
Wow, very cool. I'm excited. Listeners, get hyped. It's going to be great.
So after many sacrifices and years of hard work, she finally achieved her goal. A firm, powerful, diaphragmatic voice with a natural vibrating and pleasing sound. And this unique singing technique is presented to the world in her first single, Leave Me Alone, which you will be hearing the Japanese version of later. And also, the interview that I did with her was her first ever interview. So this is a Japan Top 10 exclusive.
Wow. There you go. Dean getting all of the hot takes. Fantastic.
Yeah.
I can't wait.
Yeah. I get to interview one of my fans.
Yeah. It's a first across the board.
Her first ever interview.
Should we get into it?
Yeah, let's get into it. So this is my interview with Salvia Davi.
Japan Top 10.
Today, I have the great honor and pleasure to be speaking with Salvia Davi. Is that how it's pronounced? Is that right?
It's Salvia Davi.
Okay, Salvia Davi. Thank you very much for making the time to meet and talk with me today.
Thank you. Thank you for inviting me. I was so happy to be invited to be in the Japan Top 10 podcast and to be interviewed by you personally. I really enjoy your music.
Oh, thank you.
And yeah, your song, No More specifically.
Oh, thank you very much. You know, you're the first artist who's actually listened to my music before.
I am the first one. Wow.
Yeah, thank you very much.
They're missing out.
Oh, thank you. And you were telling me just now that this is your first interview that you're doing.
Yes, this is my first interview, and I'm really excited and kind of nervous as well, but mostly happy.
Thank you very much. So this is a Japan Top 10 exclusive.
Yeah.
The very first interview with Salvia Davi. Thank you very much for your time today.
Thank you for inviting me. It's my pleasure to be here.
I'm going to start with a few questions then. What or who inspired you to start making music?
The short answer is, I guess, no one.
Oh, okay.
So what happened was, we had inherited a piano from my great-grandmother, who I never met. We had it in our house, and I was just naturally curious towards it. Right. And my family got me piano lessons when I was 6 years old. So yeah, that's how I started playing the piano. And then when I was 10 years old, that was when I first felt the need to express myself through writing a song on the piano.
Wow.
And that's how I got started.
So how would you describe your music to new listeners?
So since your audience is well-versed in the Japan universe, I would say that my music is mostly honne.
All right, honne,
so
right.
Yeah, so it's very much about your true feelings about something and things that you might not necessarily say to someone's face, but it's what you really are feeling inside of you. So that's basically what my music is about. And as for the sound, I sing with a diaphragmatic voice.
Yep.
And I write mostly dark ballads.
Right.
That's my usual style. And also I like to use synthesizers.
Right.
A lot.
Do you arrange all the music yourself?
Yes, I do. So I have a digital audio workstation. And I just play everything on my MIDI keyboard.
Right.
And my instruments are all virtual. I write all the instruments, what their notes, what they're playing, and I also record all the vocals, the lead vocals and the backing vocals.
So everything is done by you?
Yes, everything.
Wow. So what is your songwriting process?
Most of the time, I write a song when I really feel the need to do it.
Yeah.
So what happens is I will be going through something personally and I will be feeling a lot of emotions. And that's when I usually feel the need to write the song. So most of the songs I write because I need to and not because I choose to.
Right.
So that's when I sit at the keyboard and start writing my first inspiration, which is usually piano and vocals. So what I do is I start singing how I'm feeling. So I write music and lyrics at the same time, usually. And I do that until I've written the verse, chorus, bridge, chorus. That's my usual structure. And then I start on arranging and, working on the song, the instruments. That's my usual process. So sometimes I may write about stuff that I heard, like something I read on the news or another friend's experience.
Right.
But most of my music is from my own personal experiences.
Yeah, so I guess if it's something external anyway, it's that you're writing about, it's something that has affected you internally, isn't it? It's
Exactly, yes. That's exactly right. It's something that spoke to me deeply and something I could really relate to.
Yeah.
And even though I wasn't the one relieving that situation, I can very much understand how that person is feeling and feel the need to write something about it.
It's very interesting hearing different perspectives on songwriting and, some people just come up with the lyrics first. Some people come up with music first. In my case,
I'm aware of that.
It depends on the song. Sometimes the music comes first. Sometimes the lyric comes. I don't actually have a set way of doing it. So it's always very interesting to hear how other people work. Which artists are your biggest inspirations?
So my biggest inspirations would have to be Max Martin from the 90s. What he used to write about Britney Spears and NSYNC and all that. I used to listen to a lot of that.
Right.
And then when I was about in high school, Patsy Cline was a really big inspiration.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, they also influenced me in the way that I write. And in my adult years, I would say I was really influenced by Danny Elfman's Nightmare Before Christmas. I really enjoyed his dark aesthetic that he had in his music. And that really influenced me in the way that I write music. I wanted that a similar dark aesthetic for my own music as well.
Right, so that was an inspiration for your dark aesthetic.
Yes. Yeah. Definitely.
Are there artists outside of your music writing genre that you particularly like?
Yeah, so I really enjoy some instrumental composers, the work of some composers who write instrumentals. Yoko Kanno, she has done an amazing job on the anime Zankyo no Terror.
Right.
She has written the soundtrack for that. It was really great.
Yeah.
And then Yu Peng Chen, he's a Chinese composer that has written music for some video games.
Right.
And he's also doing an incredible job. And of course, one of my absolute icons is John Williams, who I'm sure you know. Yeah.
Yes.
I really...
the legend.
I really enjoy his... Yeah. If I had to pick a work of his that it's like my favorite, it would have to be the Anakin Padme theme from Star Wars.
Right.
It's just so romantic and beautiful.
What do you enjoy most when you are creating music?
So the thing that I enjoy the most would have to be the feeling of release I get because I how it feels to just get overloaded with emotions, to be able to put all that into words and music and to communicate the emotions through music is, I think, the most satisfying thing about writing music. It's kind of like journaling, I would say. When the thoughts circulate in your mind, it feels really liberating to be able to put them onto something else. Then, of course, to be able to share that with other people and have them feel what you're feeling is just incredible. It's the best feeling.
Yeah, I know what you mean about the feeling of it being like journaling. Because sometimes, if I play in front of an audience of people that know me very well, I sometimes get a little bit embarrassed because it's a bit like reading my diary in front of...
Oh, for sure. They might ask you some questions too, like, oh, so did you write that about blah, blah, blah?
Yeah, yeah. Oh, like, was that about so-and-so? Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. They know too much.
Yeah, that's right. You know too much.
Yeah.
Do you have any moments in your music career that really shaped you as an artist?
I think the moment that shaped me the most as an artist was when I was 18 years old. I was doing a live show. And... my voice broke during that show. And yeah, I was really, really shaken. And it was the first time that had happened to me. I didn't really know what was happening. I didn't know why it was happening. And I was preparing for that show for months. Yeah. So it really made me rethink my whole approach to singing.
Right.
And that's when I thought that I should really start taking some vocal lessons. That's how I decided to start taking classical singing lessons, and eventually I ended up really loving classical music and opera. I feel like it opened my songs and my music to a lot of new possibilities. So I think it really, really formed me as an artist, even though at the time it was a really hard time because I was singing by belting my entire life and I didn't really know anything else. So.
Right.
I was very overwhelmed by that, but it turned out to be a really good thing.
It really transformed you as an artist, this experience.
Exactly. Yes, that's the right word. Yeah.
If you were talking to a younger version of you, what advice would you give yourself?
Oh, I would tell myself to just hang in there and that I'm doing great, because I didn't think I was doing great. You know, I was really struggling. I put a lot of pressure on myself many times because I'm a perfectionist and I want everything to be perfect.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I would just tell myself that, hey, you know, it's going to be okay. You don't have to worry about it so much. It's going to turn out okay. You'll be fine.
Great advice. At any stage in one's career, I think, but particularly when you're young. Yeah.
Yeah, when you're young, you don't really know any better. You know, you might, something might happen to you and you might think that it's the end of the world, you know, but it's really not. It's really not. It does get better, even if something really hard has happened to you and you feel completely trapped. It really will get better. You just have to essentially survive and hang in there as best you can.
Exactly.
And you will, it will get better.
Okay, well, we're going to go to let our listeners listen to your song.
Oh, great.
Leave Me Alone or Hottoite.
Hottoite, yes.
Yes. Tell me about Hottoite. It's a really powerful...
Thank you. Thank you so much. So that is written from a personal experience of mine. So as you might guess, there was a person that would not leave me alone.
Right.
So, yeah. I really felt intense emotions during that time of my life. And like I said, I write Honne.
Yeah.
So that song is about what I was personally feeling at that time, but wasn't necessarily saying to the other person's face.
Yeah.
Because sometimes, you know, if you start a dialogue, then it might be never ending. You know, if you start responding to someone, they respond back, and that's a vicious cycle.
Yes, especially so, when you want them to go away. It's
exactly, exactly. So that song is about all I was feeling.
Yeah.
And writing it really helped me tap into my personal power. Because before writing it, I felt pretty trapped, like there was no way out.
Yeah.
But writing this song, it really helped me feel powerful and like I wasn't obligated in any way to stay in a situation that wasn't serving me.
Yeah.
And I really hope that listeners can derive that same sense of power when they listen to that song. You know, I hope they really can feel what I was feeling.
I know that I did.
I'm so happy to hear that. So happy.
Yeah, I'm actually getting goosebumps thinking about when I listened
to
it.
Oh my God, thank you. Thank you so much. Thank you so much.
We're going to go to the song now and let our listeners listen to Leave Me Alone or Hottoite. We're going to be listening to the Japanese version. And when we come back, I want to ask you a little bit more about the song. So this is Leave Me Alone, Hottoite. And that was released this year, wasn't it?
Yes, this year.
So it's brand new, hot off the press. That was Leave Me Alone, or in Japanese, Hottoite. So tell me, did you write the song in English first of all, and then you translated it into Japanese?
Yeah.
Or? Right.
Okay. Yes, I wrote it in English.
Right.
So when I first wrote the song, I didn't really know much about Japan in general.
Yeah.
I wrote the song in English first. Yeah. And the making a Japanese version of my song was something that I thought later on.
Right.
When I discovered my love for the Japanese language, and that was done through anime.
Right, okay, like a lot of people.
I was,
right.
Yeah. So I had watched Death Note, and I was just really, really impressed with the voice actors. And I didn't know Japanese was so beautiful because I wasn't exposed to much Japanese, you know, from our national television, I guess. Yep. And yeah. So yeah, that watching Death Note really got me into Japanese, and then developing a love for the Japanese language led me also to researching more about Japan. Right. And I just fell in love with Japan as a country, its culture, everything. I realized it's much more than anime, actually.
Oh, and yes.
Yeah. So that's why I was like, okay, I should, maybe I wanna write a Japanese version of my song. Yeah. It was just something I wanted to do. I didn't know, you know, if people would like it or not. I just thought it would sound really good, and that it would be so cool if I could do it. Yeah, I really enjoy having written a Japanese version of my song.
Did you translate it yourself, or?
Yes, I did.
Wow.
I translated it. So I had been studying for some years before actually writing the lyrics.
Yeah.
But I had decided to write the Japanese version during my first years of discovering my love for the Japanese language.
Right.
So it was something that I guess they moved in parallel, let's say. Like, yeah. I had that goal in my mind and I studied harder in order to be able to translate it myself.
Wow.
I think I had gotten the Japanese, the JLPT N4, I think, when I translated the song. I think that was when.
Right.
N4 and studying for the N3.
You're studying for the N3 now, are you?
No.
At the time that you were doing the translation.
At the time, yeah. I've got my N3 and my N2.
Oh, great.
Thanks so much.
Arigato.
Thank you. Oh, my God. The N1 was too hard for me. I failed that one. But I got up to N2.
You can do N1. Try again.
Maybe. I hope so. It's just because Japanese is something I love so much and something that I do as a hobby. I self-studied. Like, I didn't want to get a teacher. I just wanted to study by myself. And so even though I got up to N2, I really am not that comfortable yet speaking in Japanese. You know, I don't feel like I'm an N2, if you know what I mean.
Right.
Because just, yeah, it was, I'm studying alone. So I really look forward to visiting Japan one day and getting to speak Japanese with the Japanese people. I think it would be really great.
But that's great. You got your N2 just by studying by yourself. That's fantastic.
Thank you so much.
Yeah. Yeah, that's great.
Thank you so much.
I took N1 2 years ago and I passed.
Wow.
But that was after about 30 years of studying by myself. Arigato gozaimasu.
I'm sorry, did you say how many years?
30.
30, oh my God, wow. Yeah. That's a long time.
Yeah, I was an exchange student in Japan when I was in
high
school.
Oh my God, that's great. So you had a lot of fun there, I assume.
Yeah, yeah. So that kind of sparked it off for me. But since then, it's been mostly studying for myself. And
that's great. That's great.
I really admire the hard work that people put in to go for the Japanese language proficiency test. So well done. And go for N1
again.
Thank
you. You too. Okay. You know what? You convinced me to. I wasn't going to, but you convinced me to.
Okay. No, do it.
Yeah.
It's a great challenge.
Thank you. Okay, I will.
Okay. Let's get back onto the music.
Yes.
So what kind of goals in music are you looking forward to in 2022 and beyond?
Oh, that's a great question. So my most short-term goals, most immediate goals, are to release more of my original songs. I want to do some in Japanese as well, and also some English ones. For my long-term goals, I'm practicing, I should say, for some high notes that I can't get right now. So there are some musical pieces that I really want to sing, like Sempre Libera. It's an opera one.
Yeah.
And it has a high flat E.
Right.
So I can get that. I would love to get that. And also the high F. I'm talking about F6.
Yep.
That is in the Queen of the Night. I would also love to sing that.
Oh,
and also the Phantom. Yeah. Oh, my God. You so you know about opera. Oh, my God.
Yeah, I'm not a you know, I don't know a lot about opera. I studied opera when I was in high school, and
oh
I used to go
God,
to the opera a lot. Yeah, but...
My God, that's great. I had no idea. You know, I was expecting you to be more of a rock person.
Well, I am a rock guy, yeah.
Wow.
But I listen to everything. You know, I listen to electronic dance music, punk.
That's the best approach, I think, because every genre has something to offer.
Exactly.
So yeah. It's great that you're doing that. I do that myself as well. It's great.
Queen of the Night. I'd love to hear you sing
Queen of the Night. Yeah. Yes, I love that. And it also has the dark aesthetic that we talked about.
Yes.
So I think I could really do it justice, but right now it's just way too hard. I can't hit the F6 and also the staccatos. Those are some hard notes.
Yeah, in that range, it's hard. Yeah, wow.
Yeah, and they're fast and everything. So I really would love to be able to do that one day.
Good luck.
Thank you. I'm gonna need it.
So how do you gauge if an audience is going to like a song you produce? Or is that even an issue for you? Do you think about that when you're making music?
You know, I never thought about that when I was making music. I just thought, you know, I will write what comes from my soul and what I think sounds great, and then I'll put it out there, and then hopefully people will like it.
Yeah.
But starting to promote my first song, I actually realized that... Maybe people are not that used to listening to classical voices or diaphragmatic voices. Yeah, that was something that I definitely hadn't thought of, you know?
Yeah.
That's something I'm just now realizing. I guess I write mostly what I want. And then, whoever likes it, it's okay. And whoever doesn't like it, it's okay too.
Yeah.
I never really write thinking about what the audience will like and then giving it to them, because... it doesn't seem as authentic to me. I think that if I like it and if I really enjoy it, then they will feel what I'm feeling, you know, then they will enjoy it. Whereas if I try to be what I think they want, I think I might miss the ball big time. Yeah. I don't know. That's just what I think.
No, I think so too. You know, if you believe in what you're doing and creating your art rather than manufacturing a product...
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, I'm still selling a product.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, it's a product,
but it's
not something that's coming
but I'm
on
not,
a
yeah.
production line kind of.
Yeah, exactly. It's
about.
Not like write me the next hit song and give it to me by tomorrow 10. And you're like, yes, boss. You know, I'm writing a hit song. What do people like? Okay, 1, 2, 3. I'm write this one. I don't work like that.
Yeah.
And, I suppose that some people might work like that and they might be able to do a great job at it.
Yeah.
But I'm just not one of these people, because when I write something that I thought I should write, I mean, I've tried that before, I guess is what I'm trying to say. And I didn't like the result.
Yeah.
I thought of what would people, like, and then I wrote something that I thought people would like. But I didn't like it. So I guess I really don't want to put out music that I myself don't like just because I think the audience might like it. I'd rather put out what I like and then hope that my audience will like, will feel what I'm feeling, I guess, is what I want to say.
Yeah, being true to yourself, and that feeling comes across, doesn't it? And the audience comes to you.
Exactly, yes.
Yeah. If you had an unlimited budget for a music video, what would you like to do?
Oh, so I would hire some help because right now I'm just doing everything by myself with a little help from my family.
Right.
So the music video that I don't know if you've seen it.
I
have a music video
yes.
on YouTube. Okay.
Yes. Yeah.
So yeah, that was done by me and like some help from my family. So I had to like do everything, like the choreography, the directing, some virtual effects as well,
the
makeup, the outfit, everything. So I would definitely, for sure, hire some help because it just takes too much time to do all that by myself. And I would love to have more time for my music, not spend so much time on things that are not immediately related to my music.
Right.
You know, I would love to hire some people to do that job, like a choreographer, stylist, a director, a virtual effects artist, that kind of thing. And so then the possibilities, I think, are endless.
Yeah.
You know, so yeah, that's what I would do.
What is the best advice that you've ever been given?
The best advice. I guess it's the same advice that I just gave my younger self before.
Right.
So to just hang in there. Yeah. So I got that advice during the quarantine when I was, you know, as all of us, I was feeling really bad about it.
Yeah.
I, you know, was very uncertain about the future. Personally, you know, I was still trying to figure out what I was going to do with my music. So just hang in there. Also, that you don't have to be perfect is right. Another great advice. Because, you know, sometimes you might beat yourself up about it. If you are not responding to something the way you hoped you would respond, you might beat yourself up about it. You might think, oh, and why am I not dealing with this better? So, like, it's okay to not be perfect. It's okay to not really know what's going on, to not know what you're going to do. It's okay. And you just have to be patient and hang in there. And eventually you'll figure it out.
Good advice again. So, what genres or songs have you been listening to recently? Are they different from the type of music that you create?
So lately I've been listening to Christmas songs.
Okay. With the
I'm getting
Christmas
into the holiday.
Right.
Cheer. Yes. You know what? That's an interesting question because I don't really know what the genre exactly is the music that I'm creating. So I would fit it into many genres. So for me to classify something as not my genre, I really struggle because I think that my music has elements from many genres.
Yeah.
Yeah. And even the Christmas songs, I released a Christmas song. So a song for Christmas.
Right.
I released a cover of Ave Maria, for example. So even that, I would say that is something that I do. I guess the genre that I don't do is instrumentals mostly.
Right.
Is something that I don't do and don't have many elements of. Like, you will find vocals in most of my songs. I don't know if I'm going to release an instrumental. It's just not what I usually write.
Yeah.
And I've written a few, but I don't think, I don't know if I'm going to release them, you know. I think I'm doing a better job at songs with vocals.
Well, that's how you express yourself, isn't it? So... Yeah.
You mean through music?
Yeah, through your lyrics as well. So, you know.
Yes, exactly. So, yeah, maybe that's why, you know, because the way I'm composing, I'm just starting singing how I'm feeling. So if I'm not singing, I find it really hard to just write a single melody like out of nowhere, you know.
Yeah. So what about the future of your music? You've got Leave Me Alone, Hot Toite, up on...
Yeah.
Streaming sites and YouTube. What other songs have you got any plans for an album or what's in the pipeline?
For now I don't have any plans for an album, and the reason for that is that I decided to release singles because I want every single to get as much attention as possible.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that if I release a lot of singles together, that maybe some songs will not get as much attention compared to if I release them one by one.
Yep.
More of my original songs.
Right.
And also maybe some classical covers.
Wow.
But yeah, no album for the time being. Wow. I want them to be one by one.
Great. I look forward to hearing more of your original songs.
Thank you so much.
We're coming towards the close of our interview now. If you could leave one message for your fans and for our listeners, what would it be?
Oh, so thank you so much for having me, for listening to me, and for listening to my music. I hope you enjoy it. It's been a great honor and pleasure to be on the Japan Top 10 podcast. It's a great podcast, and I felt really welcomed here. I had a great time.
Oh,
so if you enjoy my music, you can find it on YouTube, Spotify, and other streaming services. And you can also visit my website for lyrics and other stuff, salviadeavi.com.
Great. Thank you very much. Thank you for your time today.
Thank you so much, Dean. I had lots of fun.
Yeah, it's been.
It was great having my first interview with you.
Yes, and thank you for giving us the honor of your first interview. That's fantastic. Japan.
Thank you. Thank you. It's my pleasure. Yeah.
Okay, and we hope to speak to you again some other time. Thank you very much.
Of course, yes. I will contact you with my latest Japanese release when that comes.
Oh, yes, do. Do. Let us be the first to know. Salvia de Avi. Thank you.
Thank you, Dean.
Wow, what a dream, what a treat. I can't believe that she's a fan. She has to interview you, kind of, and you have to interview her. Like, I just think that's the best thing. Oh, it's so great. Oh,
what yeah, it was great.
Did you have, did you enjoy getting interviewed by a fan?
Yes, I did, yes. You know, one of many interviews that I've done in my life, of course, but... Not really.
I guess we'll get into my portion of the interview. Thank you, Dean. So I interviewed Melancholia. Yeah. So he is a transgendered independent J-rock idol inspired performer from Houston, Texas, because everything is bigger in Texas. And his voice is amazing. Like I was saying it in the interview, but it gives me big Gackt vibes.
Right. Okay. Gackt. You know, yeah. Gackt. Right.
Oh, I love Gackt. He's the best. So it definitely gives me that kind of a feeling, which I love. It's very kind of, it's nostalgic for me, but also it's a really powerful voice and a really powerful tool, I think, actually, in terms of queer expression. But yeah, I think it's really powerful that he transitioned from having like a female voice into like this really strong, powerful male voice. It's really, really interesting. So also it's bending what queer expression can be.
Right.
So... I think it's really an interesting dynamic, which we'll get into in the interview a little bit. Mm-hmm. He recently released his first full album, The Diary of Our Years Together, since beginning his musical journey in 2018. So it's very exciting, just released his first album. He also has said that when one world ends, we must carry on to create anew. Drawing inspiration from both the alternative music and idol scenes in Japan, Melancholia is an original J-rock and J-pop idol who turns their true emotions, fears, and thoughts into music in hopes to discover how the world can still be beautiful in the state we are in. Mm. His goal is to create a feeling of love and acceptance with each other, and most of all, oneself with his performances. Crying out into the new world, he hopes to connect everyone through his voice. And it's true, actually. We talk about that in the interview as well a little bit, about what his hope is for the future, and especially too with the whole pandemic thing as well. It's also a big part of it, as just to see how the world is changing, and also how the world is in Japan. The queer world is changing because it's not, it used to not be, I should say, very accepting of the LGBTQ community, but now it's all very underground. I should say, wasn't that, was it not accepting? It was just very much like, it's either a big joke, like your hard gays or your drag queens that show up on like variety talk shows. And now it's becoming a bit more mainstream when you even have people like Utada Hikaru saying that she's they are non-binary. So it's really interesting to see this shift happen. And I feel like Melancholia is really on the forefront of it. So
yeah,
with the music and just with being an idol period and being involved in that scene is just so impressive. So I really can't wait for you guys to hear this interview.
Yep.
Yeah, so let's get right into it. Please enjoy this interview with Melancholia. Japan Top 10. All right, so I am here today with Melancholia. He is a J-rock idol who is also transgender and a transplant currently in Houston, Texas. But you record music in Japanese. And I gotta say, I love your music and I love your style very much.
Thank you so much.
It's such a treat. I was like, ooh, it gave me shivers, honestly. I felt like I was stepping back a little bit into like my 90s, early 2000s kind of roots.
People give me that a lot. A friend of mine who mastered all my latest album kept telling me, she kept saying, I feel like I'm listening to a My Chemical Romance CD for the first time in middle school.
Yes. Oh my gosh. All the emo feels, please. Absolutely. Was that actually a big inspiration for you for that album?
Absolutely not. absolutely not. I wasn't, but I, you know, when I heard it, I was like, hey, you know what? I'm not mad about that. I'm not mad about the comparison, so I'll gladly take it.
Mm. So the album we're talking about is the Diary of Our Days. Is that right?
Diary of Our Years Together.
Diary of Years Together. Ah, yes. Thank you. So tell us a bit about that. And we're kind of going backwards here, actually. Normally I'd be like, how did you get into it? But you know what? We'll just jump right into it. So,
no problem. Yeah.
So how, what, yeah. Tell me about
it. Oh my gosh. So I've been making original music since about 2019. When I first started this, I said, I'm not going to do anything original. I'm just going to stick with covers. I'm just going to go with the flow, be really easy with it. But then I popped out a single about 2 months after I said that. So it's just been a big spiral since then into just making more and more music and in a way challenging myself and, you know, seeing really how far I can take myself. I think that that's my main goal now. Originally, it wasn't my goal whenever I first started. And after I did two singles during the pandemic. And while I was working on both of those singles, I decided, hey, I'm gonna try and shoot for an album too. Let's see how bananas I can be today. And I somehow I ended up winding on this 12-track magnum opus of mine. It was really wild. I got to work with really, really awesome people. It was kind of just the whole album was a shot in the dark, seeing kind of how things would happen, and somehow it turned out successful. So it's more of, I call my music, whenever I put stuff out, I say it's a cry for desperation to just do something. So I think that this was just the ultimate, I'm desperate to do things, so let's make an album for the hell of it. Yeah.
Yeah, actually, it's funny that you mentioned that because you released this album in 2019, right?
I released my first EP in 2019.
Yes. So when you released that, the pandemic hadn't happened yet, because now people are saying, I'm releasing this album out of desperation because of the pandemic, and because of COVID, and because we have nothing else to do and we're stuck inside.
Right.
So actually, it's very interesting that you say that it's a an act of desperation or cry of desperation, because it kind of resonates with me, because as an artist too, it feels like a lot when it comes to doing music or performing, it's like this compulsory need, like you have to do it because it's like screaming inside of you. So you can really feel that for sure. Not in like a like a desperate calling kind of way, but in a way where it's just like, these are my emotions and my feelings.
You're so drawn to it. You need to do it almost. Yeah,
absolutely. Yes, for sure. Oh, that's great. It's so compelling. And it's a real treat to listen to. So
thank you for
being so smart enough to put a microphone in front of that while you're recording it. actually, on that kind of a note, too, you have not only recorded your own original material, you've also had material that appears in DDR and Beat Mania. So tell us a bit about that. How did you get into that realm?
Oh, my gosh. So the thing is, I've always been kind of around the like foreigners doing Japanese music scene. It's always been something that I've just been in. I kind of grew up with that. I don't know like necessarily how, but I've always just had these connections in the States. And a friend of mine that I really grew up with online, they do mainly kind of like EDM stuff, and they're really good at it. So eventually they got picked up by like Bimani and Konami, which was really awesome. But the thing was, the whole time they were like, I'm taking you with me. And I was like, oh, okay, well, sure, why not? So for a solid few years, they would always message me and say, oh my gosh, I'm really last minute on my deadline and I need vocals for this one song. But I didn't commission a vocalist to do the vocals. And are you available? And here I am in like high school, and I'm like, yeah, sure, I'm available. I'll do it, whatever you want.
Wow.
And then push comes to shove, and then I have a song with my voice on it on DDR. It was just always a bit of a childhood dream of mine. I used to be, this is like a little known fact that it probably isn't as little known, because anytime it's brought up, I like to like rub it in. It's like it's my one cool trait. But when I was 10, I remember there was like a big competition at a convention here in Houston, and there was a big DDR tournament that was being held there, and I got second place as a 10-year-old versus all these like grown men.
Yes.
So it was really fun for me. And having this like kind of this game that was really influential to me as a kid, just like music wise, and just it really kept me busy, made me so many new friends. Kind of being able to do a full circle moment and have my voice on on the game now was really surreal, and I got to play it actually the track that it did for DDR a couple weeks ago for the first time, and it was really really unreal. So I was really really happy to do that kind of stuff. I hope to do more of it in the future, just because it's so fun and it's so different from the type of genre that I am putting out nowadays.
Mm-hmm.
But it was really just all connections, and a lot of these people are really really scared to reach out to these artists who are working on games like this, but a good chunk of them are actually foreigners that are just doing the same thing that I'm doing, and they're just here to have a good time. So I think that it's really actually pretty attainable and really fun to do if you just kind of put yourself out there.
Yeah, actually, that's interesting too, because when you did this, it was in it was a couple of years ago at this point, right?
Yes.
So the internet is in full swing at this point.
Yeah.
You know, because I think about like the old Beatmania and DDR games that came out in like the early 2000s, and I'm like, well, the internet existed, but there wasn't really this opportunity for artists to be like, go check out my SoundCloud, go check out my Bandcamp. Do you have Instagram? Facebook was just becoming a thing. So it's interesting to know that like you're so well connected, and it really it worked out for you in such a way where just being in that community and being in that space, it just led to this natural progression, which is so, it's so refreshing.
Yeah.
Because usually people are like, nepotism.
Yeah,
that's why I got in.
Yeah. Yeah. It was very much so like a right place at the right time type of situation. Mm. And now all those people I know are making music. I don't know how that happened, how I grew up, and everyone that I was friends with are now musicians. But here we are, and I can't complain.
Yeah, no, honestly, if you're doing what you love, success and everything that comes with that will absolutely follow. I mean, we're living proof of it, so there you go. So Houston, let's talk a bit about that. You are in the States. Not that I'm saying that's a bad thing. I'm in Canada. I mean, I can't, you know, we have cold winters and...
Oh my God, what is that like?
Right? Let me tell you, sometimes you're like, oh, it looks so pretty in the pictures. But then when you walk outside, you're like, it's so cold.
Oh my God.
Worst.
Yeah.
Why?
Yeah.
Yeah. Driving, you can imagine. So how were you born in Houston? How?
Born and raised in Houston. I started going to anime conventions when I was, maybe five years old.
Wow.
And I have always, I've been here for a long time, almost 2 decades of going to anime conventions now. And I started performing at those at that same age. So I would always perform like any song from the time that I would, you know, I'd be performing anime song from like Oh My Goddess and Sailor Moon, you know, all these like super old throwback classics, Slayers, things like that. But I just kind of grew into that, and I kept finding more and more. And then I found idols at a very young age too, because I was so drawn to just Japanese music as a whole. And now we're here and performing in Houston out of all places. But I do a little bit of everywhere now. It's once you start putting out original content, it's a lot harder as like an quote unquote like idol-ish performer to get people to kind of take you more seriously here in the States. But you know, once you start kind of churning out original content much more often, people take you a bit more seriously. So I've had the opportunity to kind of take my music all across the US at this point. So I'm really thankful for that. But Houston is forever my base. You know, it's where I have my most listeners on my statistics and things. So I'm always happy to see that, that I'm still loved in Houston.
Oh, I love that. You got to represent. Absolutely.
Yes.
On the note of idols, actually, when I think of idols, I don't know why, in my head, just like, I was thinking about anime conventions, and I was thinking about, oh, race queens. And I'm like, oh, like, I don't know, Leah Dizon popped in my head. I mean,
Oh my gosh.
Right? Remember her?
Yeah, absolutely.
Hashtag blessed. Oh my gosh.
Absolutely.
Like, she's an example of... She was a complete...
Like, one of the forefronts.
Absolutely. A total gaijin talent, like, a foreign talent, and just showing up, being like, I'm here, and I'm looking pretty in front of this race car. And then someone was like, but can you sing? And that's just naturally what happens with idols, right? Usually it's like, do a model block, you get in. And she actually... It was really amazing. So I was watching her. I was always like, you don't speak a lick of Japanese, and yet here you are, and now you're doing lessons. And now you release a single, and then you release an album. So... And she made a career for herself. And I think there's actually something to be said for idols in, you know, people. Yeah. People really do underestimate or people in the genre a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. It's definitely very hit or miss. I have a lot of friends who are actively living in Japan right now, trying to do the same thing. And like sometimes I wouldn't necessarily say I envy it, because I don't really know if that's my end goal to be like signed or performing in Japan every single day, every night of my life. You know, I don't know if that is my end goal. But whenever I see so much work that's put in over there with some of my friends, I'm like, oh my gosh, like they really are going for it. And it's definitely something that's really, really pretty attainable. You just have to work for it is all. In the US, there's actually like kind of a niche hub for like overseas performers, and it's not even in just the US, it's kind of all throughout the world of like overseas idols. We're called like kaigai idols is kind of the official term, of performers who are releasing like original content or really focusing on more of a original route versus, you know, just covering anime themes, you know, things like that. So most of the time I have seen with a lot of the foreigners who are kind of pursuing this are a bit more open. And I think that that's just because of the rest of the world's kind of view on this type of thing. So like in the US, you know, it's of course we have our own problems with that kind of thing, but it's a lot easier as a whole to be able to say that and say it proudly versus other countries. So there's quite a few queer artists kind of that I've seen over here, and even a lot of the foreigners who are actively working in Japan, most of them that I know are queer to some degree. They're in the community to some degree. And I wouldn't say that they're necessarily advertising it every second that they get, but they also don't shy away from it. But something that is really, really cool, I think, in like kind of the more underground idol scene right now, of course, not mainstream, but there are quite a few of queer artists that are, you know, coming up in the idol scene. There's an all male idol group called Nichome no Sakigake coming out, which is an idol group with full of just, I think that there's like four gay men in it right now. And, you know, it's really refreshing to see, because things like that oftentimes in Japan are very like, I guess, fetishized in a way, because you see so much in like BL and like yaoi and things like that. It's very much like, okay, this is not written for gay men, and I can tell that this is for straight girls, which is fine, I guess. But it is nice to also, you know, have content by queer people for queer people. And I think that that's kind of what that idol group is doing. And the best part about them is that even though they are still like an indie group, really, and they do all their own music, they're actually really successful and they have really big followings. And they've worked with upfront idol groups before, which is like Hello Project, that same kind of in that same company. So it's really cool to see. A lot of the times with the underground idol groups too, so many of them have come out and said, hi, I'm bisexual. Well, there's been a lot more, you know, trans people as well. I've seen a lot of non-binary idols within the past like 1 to 2 years. And I think that it's becoming a little more lenient, but definitely only in the more underground, more alternative scene. Maybe one day it'll be a bit more mainstream. Who knows? But I do think that is a little far off if that does happen. But it is something that I never thought I would see, I guess, so quickly in especially the idol scene for it. Yeah. So it is really nice to see. It's kind of as somebody who listens primarily to J music, seeing that and being like, oh my gosh, well, I can support an artist that, you know, has probably a bit of a similar journey to me. It makes me really happy.
Yeah, I mean, representation matters. And especially when you are a foreigner and when you are queer, whether you're bi, gay, lesbian, transgendered, two-spirited, everything under that rainbow, any kind of representation you can get is like so empowering. And it really does make the world a difference, I think. And especially now, because the world is changing so much and we are seeing more on the front of sexuality, especially in Japan as well, because it was always usually it was for comedic effect, which is like, I'm thinking of like your hard gaze and et cetera. It was just very much an overtly, you know, this is a joke or gay panic or, you know, which is the same problem we have here in the West. So to actually kind of see it develop in that kind of a way and people be more open and transparent about it and not be afraid and not have it be such a dirty secret is, or not a secret, I should say. I mean, it's just like don't ask, don't tell kind of a things, really. So it's really, really nice to hear and nice to know. And let's hope it keeps the needle keeps moving in the right direction.
I think it will. I've seen so much just even in the past year or so that there's so many pushes for more inclusivity in terms of sexuality and gender in Japan recently. And just a couple of days ago, I even saw this big committee. I wouldn't be able to tell you the name, but they were saying like, hey, everyone, please come support us. Please come listen to our lectures and things like that. So it's very active. And although I'm not there personally and can't speak from it from experience, I just think it's really nice to see. And I like that it is not being taken as comedic anymore, and it's being taken seriously and as people's livelihoods, and they just want to have a good time. So I think that's really great.
I do too. I really do. I felt like that when I was in Japan, actually. It was very that's for another maybe off the air we can talk about that. So let's talk a bit about our first song we're gonna feature, The Diary of Our Years Together.
I think that while I love every track that is on my new album, the Diary of Our Years Together, it's the title track for a purpose. I kind of wrote it out to be from like a normal eye. I wanted it to be seen as like a typical love song, you know. I wanted people to think about it like, oh my gosh, this is so romantic, but it's not about that at all. Actually, I wrote it about all the years that I have spent performing and meeting everybody at meet and greets throughout the past three or four years that I've been doing this project, because that is something that has really kept me going, is the experiences that I've had with everyone throughout this whole journey so far. I wouldn't be doing this still if I didn't have everyone's support. So I really wanted to not write a love song to someone that I am, you know, in a relationship with, but a love song to everyone that's kind of supported me along the way. And I wanted it to be very reminiscent of the very first event that I had, where I was going into something uncertain and I was nervous the whole time. But in the end, I realized that everyone taught me something really special about myself, and that was that together, everything, it just made sense together. And everything just kind of clicked. So I really wanted to write this song for everyone that has supported me along the way and everyone who will support me in the future as well.
Yeah.
So the music video for this one, what was the aesthetic that you were going for? Because I'm not going to lie, when I look at you and I'm hearing your vocals, I'm like, oh, gacked. But I'm also like, ooh, but like the sexy vampire, like is very dark, very kind of gothic-y a little bit, but also very, I know it's the final days of summer. Like I'm very much all about that aesthetic. So is that what you were trying to go for? Or
I guess kind of in terms of like the final days of summer. Yeah, I think a lot of what I do recently is just, it's all based on like nostalgia. You know, I used to do a bunch of like 35 millimeter like photography and things like that. I went to film school, so I have, you know, I'm just very drawn to the beauty of film and things like that. Of course, with a team of one and my mom holding the camera for me, we can't, you know, create beautiful, huge productions. But what I can do is still kind of give this like nostalgic feeling almost, or a feeling that I have spent a whole year with someone through video.
Yes.
So that's kind of what I wanted to do. Everything. I'm just so inspired by like, I guess, coming of age films and things like that. So I really kind of, I like kind of playing with that energy, both visually and musically. So I definitely kind of wanted to go with something like that. Something that made you feel like you were right there with me and that you had these memories, but you're not really sure like why you had these memories because you weren't actually there with me. But I wanted to kind of capture that with the aesthetic of it.
Yes. The Natsukashi, the kind of feeling of like the home movie thing that a lot of artists kind of employ, and the great effect usually. Yeah. I'm not going to lie, I'm always a sucker for the opening of a music video that has like a spoken word thing, or it's just like the person you love is the one that's holding the camera and they're filming the artist. And the artist is like, no, go away.
Yes.
No,
yes.
No.
Yes.
Yeah, totally. I love it so much. It's so great. Actually, your mom is holding the camera. That's very interesting. I mean,
yes. So we are a two-person team basically. So I'll do all my merchandising at events. I'll do all my management. I do all my web work. I do all my, you know, all my emails. I do the whole thing. However, I can't really take pictures of myself or do video of myself. So I have a decently nice camera. And I just say, can you hold this and press the button? And she's always the first person to say, yes, I will. So I utilize it.
So your mom's getting a directing credit then on this one.
Yes. In fact, she does.
Ah, I love it. Has she always been supportive of your career?
Yes. Oh, my
that's
gosh.
So nice to hear. Oh, my gosh.
My loudest one. Mm-hmm. Yeah, she makes all of my like stage costumes. She always buys, every time I release a CD, she buys 5 copies of it. And she's very sweet. Kind of touching back on being trans. It was always a little nerve wracking, making music now with a new voice that is a voice that, you know, I grew up and she was a fan of the voice that I had always had, but then it started changing and I was always really nervous that I would kind of lose that support and that she'd be disappointed hearing it because it's not the same voice that she had known for so long. But it's not really the case. It's not really the case. So I'm really thankful. Of course, I'm still always going to be nervous about something like that. And this goes not just for her, but for everyone that listens to my music. But it's so far, things have been for the better. So I'm glad.
I'm so glad to hear that. It's so nice to know that there is supportive parents out there, because most people, most parents, I think, I know for my parents, especially speaking from my own experience, when I said I wanted to go into music, my parents were like, you should think about doing something that makes money, something that helps people. And I'm like, but music does help people. And also, I'm really good at it. And it's like what I love to do. And they're like, no, you should make lots of money. Listen to your mother.
Well, oh my gosh.
Yeah. Ugh. So I get, and I do, like, my parents were very supportive of me coming out, which is very, I'm very lucky because a lot of queer people don't really get a chance to have that experience. Yeah. I'd like to think that's changing now more with the newer generation, just because, like we were talking about earlier, the whole queer thing being so much more in society and much more in our pop culture. Mm-hmm. I think now there's a definite shift in being like, oh, my son or daughter is queer or whatever they choose to identify as. That's going to be okay. Whereas much earlier, it was kind of like, you're what? So it's so nice to know that your mom's like your biggest fan.
Aww, yeah, for sure.
My heart grew three sizes today. So speaking of leaving messages for your fans and, you know, being right there with them in video form, if you could say one thing to our listeners or like one message you want to give, I guess, to our listeners and to your fans, what would it be? It's almost like that RuPaul thing where it's like, what would you say to 5-year-old Melancholia?
Not Mrs. Charles. Oh my gosh.
We love her. We love Ru.
I guess
she's
great. I'm going to do a little tidbit about myself and hope that it kind of resonates with people. But I started writing music and performing after a really long hiatus, because it became something that I hated doing and I was really ashamed of it. But I found out that instead of being ashamed of who I am and what I do or my interests or any little bit about me that I was dissecting to the highest power, I found and I channeled that all through music. I urge and really ask that everyone, whatever you're feeling, I want you to find somewhere where you can take every feeling that you've ever felt ever and put it into something. Because music for me has become the thing where whenever I have really rough days, I can turn to music and turn to my project and put everything that I have into that and create something raw and beautiful. And I think that no matter what it is, whether it's a craft, whether it's your job that you go to every day, something, whatever it is that you're passionate about, I hope that everyone can reach that almost paradise where you can find solace through something that you're passionate about. And I hope that everyone can reach that one day, I guess is what I want to say. I hope that everyone can really find peace and do something passionate along the way, because without passion and without doing something that we love, really, what are we doing here, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. You may as well be a vampire and not the fun kind like we are.
Yes.
I agree with you 200%. Without fashion, it's true, you really do have nothing. I tell my students all the time, and I tell our listeners all the time on this show, Dean and I, my other co-hosts, talk about this a lot too. If you're passionate about something, success will follow. And if you like what you do, it never feels like a day of work in your life. And it's absolutely true.
And
I think
it does sound like cheesy, you know. Sometimes I say stuff and I'm like, God, I sound like a 60-year-old dad. Like I can't do this. But once you really like try and put that type of perspective into your brain and like really hammer it in, it's true. It is true. And it's something really attainable for people. But we just kind of have to work for it and realize that about ourselves. And I see so many people that really struggle to realize that they can allow themselves this. So I guess I just want whoever is listening to really take the time to get to know themselves and listen to themselves and find what really makes themselves.
I love that. You heard it. All you 70,000 listeners out there and more and our Patreon people, and it's Listener Appreciation Month, I believe. So get on it, everyone. Start thinking about what makes you. On that note as well, let's talk a bit about our other track that we're going to be featuring today. Goodbye, I'll see you tomorrow. So tell us a little bit about this. How did it come to be?
Oh my gosh. This is this track is an absolute dream for me. There is a band. It's a underground, you know, very, very indie band called New Eat over in Japan. I've been a big fan of them since they've started. And one day they followed me back and I, online and I said, that's very interesting. So a lot of the times I'll, you know, I'll work with other bands or other artists, you know, to help produce tracks for me. And then I'll kind of take the instrumental from there and add the melodies and the lyrics on top and all the rest of the nine yards. But I saw this as a weird gateway to say, you know what, I'm going to shoot a very big shot that will probably not happen at all. So I messaged the band and I asked, hey, do you take commissions for songs? Like, would you be open to producing a song for me? And lo and behold, they said, yeah, we'd love to. And I was like, oh, no way. So it's a bit of a weird dynamic, you know, being a fan of someone for so long and then suddenly getting emails from them saying, hey, well, next time you're in Japan, you know, we got to meet up so we can do a show together. You know, it's a weird dynamic. It's a really weird dynamic, but it is something that has made me so happy and it has motivated me so much. The lead vocalist of New Eat and the main head that produced this track and did most of the work on it, Yasuyuki Ota, has been so, so kind and so patient and just generous in this entire process. Even after the album has been released, he's been keeping tabs and sending my album out to even more artists over there. And it's really, really a dream that I was able to do this song. It's a very, again, a very like kind of nostalgic coming of age track. Very reminiscent of, you know, kind of a rough childhood growing up, but always having somebody to say, I'll see you tomorrow too, and looking forward to the next day. So that's kind of what it's about. But overall, it's like the perfect ribbon wrapping it all together for me.
Let's listen to Goodbye, I'll See You Tomorrow.
Well, my music is streaming anywhere. You can listen to me on Spotify, Apple Music. I also have my music up on Bandcamp. Other than that, my website is melancholia with A-A-H at the end dot club. And all of my release information, my lyrics, events that I'll be going to, and social medias can all be found there. But other than that, you can just find me on any social media with that same, the same
nice.
Handle.
She's branding herself. She's making a name. She's the queen. She's a star. Ah, I love it. Okay. Well, there we go. We did it. Thank you so much for joining me today. It was a real pleasure to get to hang out with you and chat with you.
Yeah, of course. Thank you.
And everyone, please go and follow Melancholia. He's releasing some great work. And
yes.
And look him up. We have a link on our website. And also, if you Google Melancholia, M-E-L-A-N-C-H-O-L-I-A-A-H.
Yes.
Two exclamation marks.
One, but. Oh. But
okay. Two for us, because you're just so awesome. We're like, Melancholia, yes. So yes, go check him out. He is everywhere, and he is a true delight. Thank you.
Thank you.
I love the story about the Beatmania DDR. Yeah. So if, well, you've listened to the interview now, but the fact that he had a dream to be like, I'm going to be on, like, I want to get on the DDR thing. And then he ends up doing it is really, really kind of like a cool full circle moment. It's kind of, I guess, like how your artist, Salvia, got a chance to interview you in a way. The whole fan thing, having like a nice full circle dreams realized kind of moment is super cool. I think that's like, that's the best. It's one of the most interesting things and most powerful things you can do as like a human for your own self-worth and, you know, professional achievement. Yeah. I think that's great.
If you enjoyed this episode, why don't you consider becoming a Patreon donor at jtop10.jp/club, starting at $1 a month, and support our podcast and get this episode and all other episodes ad and announcement free. That sounds like a good deal, doesn't it?
Sure does. And it won't just be for this month either.
No, that's right.
Month of November, Listener Appreciation Month. It'd be every month for all time.
For all time.
Yeah. Because we're dramatic. Next month will be, not to toot my own horn, but I'm going to. It's my anniversary month next month. It'll be 1 year of me being on this podcast.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
I nearly said Mazel Tov. I should be saying Omedetou.
Arigato gozaimasu. So yeah, very exciting. And to our wonderful listeners, we hope you have a wonderful December 2021 and a fantastic new year. Dean and I will be back
in January.
In January with another wonderful artist from each of us to interview and to entertain you. So please come back and check us out. And thank you for sticking with us this wonderful 2021.
Yes.
This was episode 408 of Japan Top 10, Indie Artist Interview number 10 with Salvia D'Avi and Melancholia. I'm your host, Edward.
And I'm Dean.
We'll see you next time. Bye, B.
See you next time. Bye, B.
Japan Top 10, the number one Japanese music podcast.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.